Yesterday afternoon, Peter Lark, the embattled general manager of Lansing's Board of Water and Light, stated at a press conference that he would remain as the head of the public utility. The announcement came after the Lansing State Journal reported that Mr. Lark was out of town in New York City for the early days of the area's extended power outage. Mr. Lark and the Board of Water and Light have come under heavy criticism for their handling of the crisis, which left nearly 40,000 customers in the dark, some for more than 11 days. As evidenced by the many citizen comments at last Monday's special Lansing City Council meeting, much of this criticism has focused on the failure of the Board of Water and Light to communicate effectively with its customers. With us now to get a sense of best practices for communication in a crisis situation like this is Matthew Seeger. He's the Dean of the College of Fine Performing and Communication Arts at Wayne State University, an expert in crisis communication, and has been studying closely what happened here in Lansing recently. Matt, welcome to Current State.
Thank you very much, Mark. I'm glad to be here.
Let's talk first about crisis communication more broadly. Each response would seem to vary based on the event. Can you talk to us about that?
Absolutely. Each crisis has its own shape, its own character, and each of those events is going to lead us to particular kinds of issues or particular kinds of problems that we have to address. There are general principles that hold across all different kinds of events. So while we have general operating procedures or best practices, we also need to adopt those to the specifics of the situation.
And let's talk about what's unique about a utility and a municipality during a power outage. Let's focus on that. What are the features of that?
Absolutely. Any power outage is going to place very heavy demands on the communication system as well as the emergency operation systems. Obviously, the first issue is getting the power back on. And there are lots of logistical issues, lots of technical issues in terms of addressing that particular contingency. In addition, a power outage creates very intense needs for information on the part of the public. We need to know how long the power is going to be out. We need to know when we can expect the power to return. So we need that information to be able to plan. If we expect the power to be out for just a few hours, we will respond very differently than if we expect the power to be out for several days. So there are intense demands for information. At the same time, often our communication capacity is reduced. We don't have as much ability to communicate at the very moment that the public needs more information.
Well, based on those criteria then, how did the Lansing Board of Water and Light do?
Well, I can't say that they struck a high mark here. I would describe their communication systems as certainly not state-of-the-art. I think that that has been acknowledged across the board here. I think that, they did not provide adequate information in a timely manner to the public and were unable to provide, precise, specific projections about when the power would come back on. Now, that's a real challenge in a power outage situation because the utilities don't have specific information. They can't make detailed projections because there are so many contingencies involved in these events. Nonetheless, they need to, provide as much information in a timely manner to the public as possible so that the public can make adequate predictions about, how they would respond.
Let's zero in, Matthew, on particular best practices in a power outage situation like this. What would you say are the key components of a solid emergency communications plan for a publicly owned utility?
Well, there are, general principles for communication that would apply to every utility, and I wouldn't distinguish between a public utility and other kinds of utilities. The basic principles of communication that apply in this circumstance is we need to understand our audiences. We need to have pre-established channels and mechanisms for communicating with those audiences. Those channels and mechanisms need to be well matched to the needs of that particular audience and to the circumstance of the crisis. So contemporary approaches to crisis communication right now are privileging social media, are privileging digital approaches to this communication problem. So digital reporting systems, online mapping, which allows us to be able to determine, you know, where the crews are. We actually have some systems that put GPS locators on crews so we can actually go online and see where those crews are working at a particular time. In addition, Twitter is an incredibly powerful tool which can allow us to have information, just-in-time information about updates, and can also be very helpful in terms of helping us prepare for a crisis, because Twitter alerts can signal that an event is impending and can give people information about how to prepare for that event. So there are many contingencies that apply in these circumstances, but technology has really helped us, you know, address some of those particular contingencies.
So from your perspective, Matthew, has the Board of Water and Light failed to adapt to digital communications?
Yeah, I would not describe their communication system as state-of-the-art. I've looked at some of their plans online. There are a couple of versions of their plans, but it does not appear that, you know, they have adopted these new technologies and these approaches. I would think that I would describe their approach to communication that I have seen as sort of rudimentary. It is also characteristic in these events that often, you know, when faced with the criticism of a crisis or faced with an inadequate response, there's a sort of circle the wagon mentality that happens. And, you know, people become very insulated, very defensive in terms of their positions, and that actually impedes our ability to communicate effectively. During a crisis, we want our leaders to be out there. We want them to be engaged with the public. We want to see them at the scene of the event. We want to see them at community meetings. We want to understand that they understand our problem and that they're working hard to address it.
You're referring to kind of an all-hands-on-deck approach that you're suggesting utilities need to communicate. The public here in Lansing is now contending with the fact that the head of the Board of Water and Light, Peter Lark, left town to celebrate Christmas while there were still quite a few people without power. He maintains he stayed in contact with people while he was gone. What do you make of that?
I think that was certainly an unwise decision, and certainly it did not create confidence in the approach that was being taken to this particular episode. We do need all hands on deck. We need to understand, the public needs to understand, that our leaders empathize with what's going on. And when you're without electricity, particularly in weather like this, particularly around the holidays, that's a really, really challenging circumstance for people. It can be life-threatening. Certainly it is disruptive. It is a psychological problem. it impedes our ability to work. You know, it can be a really devastating circumstance, particularly when we have such high expectations, you know, for the electricity coming on. You know, many countries, if you get 3 hours of electricity, you're lucky. So our expectations here are part of what feeds into this being a crisis, because we have such high expectations. But nonetheless, we want our leaders to be, you know, fully engaged and to really understand and show their understanding of what's happening. So, you know, visiting the site, interacting with the community, going out, showing the flag, showing that all hands are on deck, I think is critical in circumstances like this.
Our guest on Current State this morning is Matthew Seeger, who's an expert in crisis communications and is the dean of the College of Fine Performing and Communication Arts at Wayne State University. There's a concept in crisis communications called communication surge capacity. Can you talk to us about that and why that's important?
Sure. Well, this is a concept that applies to all the issues associated with a crisis. And that is that, you know, during a crisis, we are going to need more resources in a particular area to address the contingency of the crisis. So, for example, in utilities, most often there are joint operating agreements with other utilities so that crews come in to surge the capacity to address the power outage at that particular time. The same process applies in communication systems. If we know that, you know, 40,000 customers are going to be calling in with their concerns about power outage, we certainly should surge our capacity to manage that particular communication load. This is a fundamental concept in all crisis response, certainly crisis communication.
Well, let's assume, though, that the Board of Water and Light needs to invest significantly in emergency preparedness. Let's just assume that. That would appear to be the case here quite clearly. How do we not fall trap to the 1% doctrine, I'll call it, where we spend tons of time and money to prepare for something that is, in reality, a very rare event? This ice storm, to find anything that compares to the ice storm we just went through, you have to go back decades. How do you assess what you prepare for and what you don't?
Well, the first thing I would do is I would question that assumption that you just made, that these events are very rare events. Because, you know, while an ice storm, an isolated ice storm, is a rare event, a crisis is not nearly as rare. We have floods, we have tornadoes, we have toxic spills, we have infectious disease outbreaks. We have a variety of different bad things that can happen, and unfortunately, it appears that given our aging infrastructure, giving more demands on our infrastructure, giving large-scale processes like climate change, these kinds of bad things are happening with more frequency. So I would first of all question your assumption about how rare these events are. They're not as rare if we start thinking about them as a class of events as opposed to an isolated event. Secondly, the first thing we do in doing risk assessment, which is the process you're talking about, is looking historically at what has happened within a particular community to understand the risk factors associated with that community. Lansing has three lovely rivers. Those rivers flood. And they've flooded a number of cases historically, and they're going to flood again. We live in Michigan. Michigan has weather, and it's interesting weather. And weather is going to happen again. So these are the kinds of things that we look at in terms of determining our particular risk factors. I would also say that good communication practices are good crisis communication practices. So investing in communication more broadly can help you in terms of a crisis. So that gets us out of that 1% phenomenon.
What sort of planning and training is required for a utility to be adequately prepared for emergency communications?
Well, again, I would reframe that question, and I would say what kind of training and preparation is necessary for a community, which includes a utility, to be prepared for a crisis? And, you know, there are lots of really good principles now about community resilience and how communities can become better prepared for these events. Preparedness begins very much at the individual level. It moves to the family level. It moves to the organizational level, the community level. So understanding that every component of a community has a role is critically important. You know, really looking at the crisis plans, making sure they are updated regularly, annually, making sure they are practiced, understanding how other organizations in the industry are responding to these events, looking for best practices industry-wide. Those are all really helpful principles in terms of crisis preparedness and planning.
I'd like to revisit briefly a point you brought up earlier. You touched on it. Would you say American expectations of power always being available everywhere are arguably too high? As you pointed out, there are parts of the world where this just isn't the case, where it's factored, it's baked into the cake that you're not going to have power 24/7.
Sure. Well, crisis is, definition or perception of a crisis is a cultural phenomenon. So what is considered a crisis here wouldn't necessarily be considered a crisis anywhere else. I mean, we've got right now fun weather in Michigan, which is really bad and you know, not necessarily very exciting. But it isn't a crisis necessarily. Now, if we move this weather 200 miles south, obviously we have a crisis scenario. So crisis is culturally defined. And our expectations in this country in general are quite high that, you know, we're going to have power, we're going to have water, we're going to be able to get to work, there's going to be fresh fruit in the market, and you know, a bad hair day for some of us can turn into a crisis. So, you know, really understanding that our expectations are what help determine a crisis, I think, is really important. And I think going forward, as we see more events, where we see, you know, more extreme weather events, where we see more technological failures. You know, we're as a society, we're going to have to really rethink, you know, what constitutes a crisis.
Well, we would like to have you back, Matthew, as current state continues to watch the Board of Water and Light's actions to address this situation, the city's actions, the community's sentiment. Dr. Matthew Seeger is the Dean of the College of Fine Performing and Communication Arts at Wayne State University and an expert in crisis communications. Matt, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.